13. Impact Assessments. It was not precisely true that Ellen Bywater still saw the ghost of her late husband Will, but it wasn't not true either. The most persistent hauntings are the ghosts of lost futures. He was strong and healthy. His father had lived to 92. Ellen and Will Bywater had had a famously happy marriage, and he had died suddenly at 64. Nothing is promised, people say. And yet, this had not been Ellen Bywater's experience of life. Everything had been promised. For the past 50 years for Ellen Bywater, there had been hot baths and cold juice. There had been unseen hands preparing pancakes for breakfast and cleaning the stove when she might do a little cooking herself. She had a happy marriage. She had raised good children who took their places as trustees of the Bywater Foundation, distributing significant monies to worthy causes before a very simple lunch of poached salmon and watercress on the terrace. The children would beget further clean-limbed and healthy offspring, and the line of Bywater would continue. Even Badger would eventually find their way. These were the promises made by hard work, by her long years at Medlar, by her commitment to good corporate culture, by the care she had taken over the ousting of Albert Dabrowski. She thought of Albert. The look on the man's face when he realized the board was proposing to appoint her as CEO in his place. He'd shouted and railed, undignified. She understood that this was a shock, but couldn't he hold it together? He was, after all, one of the fathers of the modern world in so many ways. No one could or would take that away from him. The night it was done, she'd fallen into Will's arms and cried for him. Whenever she was asked about Albert Dabrowski, she'd spoken warmly about him. She could only hope to follow the design principles he had laid down. He was a visionary, and along with the rest of the world, she was waiting to see what he'd invent next. And yet, she knew that this was not entirely true. She had participated in the plan to oust him with reticence, not wanting to show how much she wanted it, knowing that as a woman in her position, wanting it was the last thing anyone needed to see from her.
"They don't know you like I know you," said Will, burying his face in her lap.
They had had a famously happy marriage, and what that means is you're still fucking in your 60s. But a horror had sunk into her bones at quite how easy and even enjoyable it had been to take it from him. She had made Albert Dabrowski much richer than he could ever have been on his own. But he hadn't known. It was a future he hadn't seen coming. He came into that very last meeting still operating on the old parameters, as if the discarded future were still operational, as if it hadn't been shunted into a siding by night without his knowledge or consent. She knew what it was like to do it, and she could see what it would feel like to have it happen to you. "What it feels like," she'd said to Will quietly the previous night while the others were sleeping, "is nothing. It feels like things are a bit easier than usual. It feels like you're all getting on fine." Will lolled by the fire, his long torso, his full head of thick gray hair. He said,
"There's a problem with that reasoning, Nellie."
"Doesn't this all feel a little easy to you?" said Ellen.
"It doesn't feel anyway to me," said Will. "I'm dead."
"What's it like to be dead?" she said.
"Nothing much," said Will. "It's just that your tax plans are voided and your will is executed and no one's interested in what you have to say."
"Except me," she said. And she felt grateful and a little smug that the person she liked best in the world was already definitely dead instead of being only probably dead like everyone else's loved ones. "You know my secret," said Ellen.
"I do now,"
said Will. "But you can't tell anyone," she said. Her secret was the widow's secret, that as she'd gotten onto the plane from the Action Now conference, she had been a little glad. If Will wasn't in the world any longer, there was no real point in continuing with the project of the human race. She felt the satisfaction of having had a memo taken seriously. "I told you we should junk it all."
Ellen had followed Zhen's tracks out of the camp. It wasn't difficult. Zhen hadn't taken much trouble to conceal where she was going. The earth was soft and rich, the imprints of the suit's boots very distinctive. Will said,
"What is it you're expecting to find?"
Ellen said, "I know a trick question when I hear one." Will said,
"Because we tend to find whatever we're looking for."
"I'm not expecting anything."
"You can't lie to me anymore now I'm dead. That's one of the perks."
On the upward path, Ellen was panting, even with the aid of the suit's servo motors. She was sweating. Maybe she was getting sick. Maybe this was it. Maybe she'd already been infected with the pigeon flu that had killed them all. "Look," she said to Will, "sometimes in business, you just have to use your instincts." Will said,
"Well, okay, but what if your instincts are faulty? Remember the lectures at INSEAD? Cognitive errors, systemic bias, your fault detector can't tell you whether it's faulty. If you walk along staring at the cracks in the pavement, you're going to fall."
"Look," she said. Will was standing on the path next to her, incongruous in slacks and the slouchy sweater he'd often worn in the place on Cape Cod. This was reasonable, Will, the man who made up for her. They'd had a famously happy marriage, and what that means is they managed to steer each other around their potholes. "Do you have an alternative narrative for me? I'm here. I'm open to listening."
"We can't know what we don't know," said Will,
a thing he had often said in life. "So, I'm going to find out," she said, and continued the ascent of the steep path. There is a trajectory to human affairs. At a certain point, things become inevitable. The tracks in the soft mud led into the crack in the rock. Inside the cave, there was a proprietary fantail port set into the stone, white and shining. Ellen looked at it for a long time. She said, "See? See?" Will said,
"I have to say, darling, that this doesn't look good for Lenk Skettlish."
"Well, do you have a hypothesis for me that isn't that he deliberately trapped us on this island that is clearly somehow built for him and that he probably killed Zimri Nomik?"
"There are always more things we don't know," said Will.
"Oh yeah," she said. "Name 10. Give me other explanations for this." But because Will wasn't really real, not outside her own mind, he couldn't. Sometimes everything you fear becomes true. Sometimes you really are alone in a cave with the world gone, realizing that if you're going to get what you want, you're going to have to take it. Sometimes there's nothing for it but the unspeakable. Ellen crouched at the entrance to the cave. She tasted stone and fire. She'd lost her trust in the ability of the world to remain upright. The very air itself had become her enemy. The world had become a rain of ash. In the corner of her eye, Will was naked, as lean as a fox, as hungry as the devil. He had been like this sometimes at home, wild nights that ended with sex and then forgiveness and promises. She remembered meeting him and knowing that he would give her perfect children, and when she truly wanted something, he would never stop her. Their marriage had been famously happy, and what that meant was that they had learned to work with what they had.